when he went, can you remember going to sleep that night? What was it like? Yeah, what was it like when he'd gone, I suppose?
Well, I think, in all honesty, going to sleep that night was fine, because what happened was that I had spent most of the night in the police station, being examined, interviewed, all the rest of it, and we stayed with friends.
Right.
And even aged 14, my friend's mum gave me the strongest, biggest glass of wine, I think, ever.
Good for her.
And I went to bed with who was at the time my best friend in her nice cosy bedroom, and I was in a nice safe place. So I didn't have that feeling of... I was safe, and that was all I cared about.
That must have been amazing.
It was amazing, because we rang the police eventually, even though this guy said, don't ring the police or I'll come back and kill you and all the rest of it. We did ring the police. We initially rang my dad's friend. My dad had died the year before. We rang his friend who lived about half a mile away. We rang him first. And then I, for some reason, wanted to ring my best friend, because I just did. So I rang her, and she came racing down with her parents, which must have been really tough, because I know the dad actually sat in the car for the first 10 minutes, because I think he felt, being a man, he just didn't... He daren't come in. He was worried. He was scared. I think he was ashamed, you know. I mean, he knew. I told this girl immediately on the phone what happened. Yeah. Because the thing is, when they came to the door, I was naked with a school mac wrapped around me and ties still around my neck and around my hands. You know, we didn't give it a chance to sort of... We knew we couldn't shower or do anything like that, you know, so we left everything as it was and just thought, right, this is what's got to happen.
What you wanted to do? Did you want to shower? Did you want to?
No, I was... it sounds crazy because I know everybody says that.
Yeah.
I didn't.
No.
I mean, I did. I was like, yeah, I will have a shower. I wasn't sort of, you know, I knew that was on the cards.
Yeah.
But it wasn't this desperate urge. I never felt that way. I've never felt that he had tainted me.
Mm.
Or at least not at that point. And I think, you know, not in that way, not in the sort of cliched sort of way we sometimes talk about, or, you know, I've never really felt
to be clear, so had he had sexual intercourse with you? Was that
he
one of
had
the things
had,
he did?
Right, to be absolutely clear, he had had nearly successful penetration with me.
Right.
He actually, he had an attempted rape with me.
Right.
It was anal sex with me.
Okay.
It was anal sex and rape with my mum.
Right.
And what they classed as a very serious sexual assault with me, because it included the photos.
Right.
And when he'd sat on my chest and I had to, you know...
Have him in your mouth.
Yeah, basically. So, in the...
Sexual assault, that's a kind of code, isn't it?
This is what... You see, people say to me, oh, you know, in some ways, the term rape, I wasn't officially raped. Not
because he didn't have his penis inside
my
you,
vagina.
And he didn't
that's
have
like,
an orgasm inside
yeah, well, you. Exactly, well, no, that's it? Not... No, no. It's
nothing
about penetration.
About penetration.
And basically, because I was a virgin and because my hymen hadn't been fully broken, even though there was a little bit of damage, I was not... You know, they couldn't charge him with raping me. It was attempted rape.
Right.
Attempted rape. But I say to people I was raped, because I can't go around and say... Well, when I was 14 and I this guy buggered me and made me give him a blow, you know, it's like, it's completely crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy, you know, he walked in, he attacked us, he robbed from us, he raped my mum, he, you know, assaulted me. I mean, it's rape, you know.
How were you after? I mean, I'm really pleased you went to sleep with a big glass of wine that night.
Yeah.
And then when you woke, how were you in your own skin after that happened?
The first thing I did, and this is quite interesting, is I didn't go the whole sort of scrubbing myself in the shower route, but I did go and get my hair chopped off the next day.
Well, all
I had long hair, or longish hair, and I got it all chopped off quite short.
Did you?
And looking back, I think that was a statement. I was making a statement.
What kind of a statement?
That I was going to be okay. I was still going to do something life-changing, and I was going to be me and fuck everyone, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I think that was important.
What
and I was
amazing.
Like, if I'm going to have a drama, I will look good. I mean, I know, make it sound funny, but it was true. It's like, you know, And so I did that. I went down into the middle of the town the next day in Woodbridge, which is like this really sleepy little town.
Yeah.
People had heard, they knew it was us, and there was me walking down the street into the hairdressers. I think everybody thought I'd gone completely mad, and maybe I had. But
that's an incredible thing to do. When you look back now
at
that girl who did that, what do you think about her?
I'm proud of her, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not... I've always done things in a slightly odd way, in all honesty. I'm not very good at sort of... I don't know. I deal with things my own way. I just do. And it's never really conventional, you know.
You sure do. But that's an amazing thing to do.
Yeah. But I needed to do it. I just did. And I know at the time, I think my friend's mum was trying to persuade the hairdresser to come up to the house to come and cut my hair. I was like, no, I want to go. I'm going to go.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, the first few days and even the first 2 weeks, I mean, we had friends come to visit to see if we were okay.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much hustle and bustle. There was all the police inquiry. There was visits to the police station every day, going over everything 50 million times.
Mm.
And I think looking back, I enjoyed the novelty,
yeah.
in all honesty. There was so much going on. It was very interesting. I loved talking to the police. Even before the attack, I was interested in criminals and psychology and all that stuff. So I was, you know, I was kind of in my element. I mean, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I was determined that we would catch this guy. So I went around drawing pictures of everything. And... even got my brother to sort of make do poses so I could draw, because I figured that he was the same height and sort of not quite build, but the same height as my brother. So I got my brother to sort of do poses of what he looked like when he came in and how was he standing. And
what
I just
did you do
drew
with those pictures,
gave them to the police.
Okay.
And they used them to work out height and things like that.
Okay.
So I was a busy girl those first 2 or 3 weeks and I was okay.
And what was the next phase, if there was another?
Well, the next phase really was that, I mean, we were lucky in that he was caught 2 weeks later.
Wow.
And so the next phase was that once he was caught, then the police could then go away and do their own inquiries and just build the case against him, because it was pretty much obvious he was going to plead guilty, because he admitted to things that nobody else could know about. We weren't allowed at the time to talk about the photos. We weren't allowed to say that there'd been Polaroid photos.
Why not?
We weren't allowed to say that he'd made us drink wine. We weren't allowed to say that he'd used baby oil on us.
Who said you weren't
The right? police, because they didn't want... If anything came out, any false confessions from anyone.
Yeah.
It was something they could find out, they could use.
Okay.
So that if anybody admitted to something and knew details, you know... So that was they kept a certain set of facts that they wanted us to keep undisclosed.
Okay.
You know?
Gosh, so you really worked really together with them, didn't you?
Well, they were amazing. Amazing. Seriously, they were amazing. The police that dealt with us, and they were like part of the family, really.
How long did it take for the case to come to court?
The case came to court in the following February. February
kind of
after
months.
October, yeah. So,
and were you what was it like as you were getting? You know, was there a sense of justice being done? Were you in any doubt
because
would ever be not convicted or?
Well, no, not really. I don't think I ever had. I mean, I do feel sorry for other people, other victims who have this whole thing where they've actually got to go and give evidence, because we were pretty much assured the whole way through that he would be pleading guilty.
Right. In which case, you wouldn't need to give evidence.
Wouldn't need to give it. He was pleading guilty to everything.
Were you still the slightly kind of feisty, confident, crime-busting 14-year-old?
I was very confident in that I wanted to go and see him in court, and everybody suggested that I didn't. And even one of the chief sort of superintendent guys came to see me at the house and begged me not to.
Why did they do that?
And I said, I think they just thought I'd had enough trauma.
Were they protecting you?
Yeah.
But they didn't understand why.
No, they didn't get why. And I think it was only when they saw me go to the court case and I proved them all wrong that then they realised I needed to put a face to this 10-foot balaclavaed monster.
Yeah.
I needed to see that there was just this 5-foot-10-inch man behind there, you know. And I knew it. And to me, it was logical. You know, it was my nightmares I was trying to deal with, not theirs. And I was getting a bit fed up of being pushed around.
Mm.
I know what I want, I suppose. And I think even then, I was just like, I know that this is the right thing to do.
And when you saw him, what was that like when you saw
him? Amazing, actually.
What was the actual moment when you first set eyes on him?
I suppose slight disbelief at first, because he just didn't look scary. He looked a bit pathetic, really.
Was it in the actual courtroom?
It was in the courtroom.
You were there already and he walked in?
Yeah, he walked in. He didn't see me at first, so, and I didn't even see his face at first. I saw sort of the back of him because there was so much hustle bustle as he came in. So I just saw him. He just looked very neat and tidy. He was in the American military, so he was just immaculately ironed.
Was he in uniform?
Just very military looking person. Okay. And just very, you know, very straight back. I think he, from the moment he pleaded guilty, he had accepted that was it for him. You know, I think that was certainly what I got. And he was actually a husband with two young kids and a wife.
So you've already defied so many of my images of you as someone who was raped. So you were this quick thinking, quite strategic, tactical, intelligent 14-year-old who was dealing with these things in a whole load of ways. So now when you're in court and he gets convicted, who are you then? Did you change? What changed for you?
Well,
did anything change?
What surprised me at the end was that, I mean, I'd say that a lot of the reason why I went there as well was not just to humanise him and to, you know, take away that balaclava, but it was also I wanted him to see me. That
Did
was
you?
Crucial. I wanted him to look at me. And that was important. You know, I wanted him to see that I had the strength to go there to look him in the eye, you know, and basically say, I'm all right. You know, how are you? Do you know what I mean? It was literally like, that's what I wanted to do.
And so did your eyes ever meet his?
Yeah, at the end. The justice, his name was Justice Elliott, the judge, when he was sentenced, gave him the sentence. It was 12 years. And they led him out of the court. I was in the first row of the gallery above. And as he turned round and came and walked under the gallery, he looked directly up at me. And we locked eyes for a good few seconds. And that's probably one of the most important looks I've ever given anyone in my life, you know. So, and that was important. That was what I had. Well, that's what I was there to do. And
what was the look that you gave him?
The look was,
were you looking at him? Was he looking at you?
Kind of both. I think we locked eyes kind of together. I think he was looking for me and I was looking for him.
But why was it one of the most important looks you ever gave?
I wanted him to see a message. I wanted him to see that I would survive. You know, that he might have felt at the time that he had controlled me or defiled me or violated me or whatever he wanted to think or whatever he was that he was trying to get out of that night. But I wanted that look to say that he wasn't going to do it. You know, he might have had his fun for a couple of hours, but that essentially it hadn't worked, you know. That was what I wanted him to see.
And when he went, wherever he went, and when you left, did you feel any sense of closure, movement?
Well, what happened, actually, was as soon as his back was turned, and as soon as he's no longer looking at me, I collapsed into a sobbing heap for about half an hour. And it was just all of the adrenaline and the strength and everything I'd had over the previous weeks was just, I just turned to jelly. And that was it. I'd let my guard down, you know. And then we all went back to the house and drank champagne.
Did you?
And toasted him. Literally, and just said, take that, you know. It was a good feeling. And then that was actually the start of properly of recovery at that point.
Yeah,
I hadn't even begun to even acknowledge that there was a recovery that needed to take place.